What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
James, I know you and Kyle talked about this quite a bit on the Insiders today. Kyle's been just adamant that Nick Bosa has to be better. He has to have a bigger impact on these 49er games.
Yeah, I've been asking for it since last season. You know, I thought that he his holdout last year totally impacted who he was as a player. I don't think he ever looked right until we got maybe all the way to the Super Bowl. But even like to really pick it up, it took like week eight. He seems like a guy who's a little bit of a slow starter. And you have all these defensive ends in the league, all these defensive players that are impactful each and every week that change the game. And guys like Watt, guys, you know, like Aiden Hutchinson, and Bosa is paid like one of those guys, but he just doesn't have the same impact. I would like to tell you he does, but he doesn't. There was a season where he was one of those guys, but he stopped being that guy probably a year and a half ago, it seems like. And the 49ers are, they pay him a lot to not really get to the quarterback as much as you would hope that he would.
I think what's really tough too for 49er fans, Hammer, is, and I don't think Trent Williams falls into this category at all, but I do think Brandon Ayuk does. I think Nick Bosa does. You have guys who hold out and, you know, fight for these dollar figures and get them. And then it's like, well, wait, you haven't lived up to the contract in which you are getting paid. And that's just one of the things in sports. You're not always judged against how you, you're not always judged by what you do on the football field. You're judged by what you do on the football field versus what you make. And when you're one of the top players, when you're one of the top paid non-quarterbacks in the entire league, and you can name three or four players at your position that are playing better than you are, that's a tough look for Nick Bosa. Brandon Ayuk is, I think, sixth on the wide receiver list, and he's like 100th in terms of – he's just terrible right now. He can't get going this season.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, the real impact that those things have, right? It's not only that you're getting paid all that money. It's that someone else isn't getting paid that money on your roster. And so when we're watching, you know, like they have no answer for Dre Greenlaw being out, and they went out and they picked up a couple of players that to try to like plug a hole there, but they don't have any money to go get a real, you know, fix. When you look at their offensive line, you know, their right tackle isn't great. Their center isn't great. You know, they got a nice young set of guards and a great tackle, but what you do to pay Bosa and what you do to pay, you know, guys like Ayuk and guys like Christian McCaffrey is that you skimp on your depth. And then when those guys aren't playing, I mean, I don't even know who they're running out there at tight end. You know, that's a problem that they don't have really the money or they haven't drafted well at all at the backup tight end position. But like when Kittle goes down, you pay him a bunch of money and then all of a sudden you've got no one that you can put in there to sort of fill that that void. And I think right now the depth of this team is hurting. And a lot of the reason why it's hurting is because of the high priced players that they have. And unfortunately, a whole bunch of their high-priced players are sitting on the sidelines. Yeah. And I don't know what the dollar figure is, but you know, you want to add up what Kittle makes, what McCaffrey makes, what Debo makes. Those guys are sitting on the sidelines, and that's a lot of money sitting there that you just don't have the depth to back them up the proper way.
Yeah, with that said, though, I don't feel like the offensive line has been bad. I think we saw that on display yesterday where – you know, Brock Purdy just had an eternity on several plays in the second half. Really, I thought he had an eternity to throw the ball most of the game. But to your point, one of those guys goes down, man, you've got a world of issues at that position. You better hope that it's not Trent Williams that goes down. And we certainly had a moment where he goes down yesterday, and it's like, oh, dear God, please no. And they come back, no, it's cool. He was just cramping. He's good. He's back out there. And it's like, all right, you're holding your breath the entire commercial break. I think the same thing happened with Fred Warner, though it wasn't cramping. It was something else. He inevitably found his way back out there on the field after, I think, missing one play. But, yeah, I'm with you, James. Once you get past the spot one of that depth chart, it can get a little sketchy.
Well, I mean, look at Trent Williams. Trent Williams has left the game twice in the first 3 weeks to go get an IV because he's not in the right shape.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and he acknowledged, to Christina Pink that this is difficult. It's extremely difficult. It's way harder than I imagined, and it feels like to me you're probably seeing the same situation with Brandon Ayuk, even though he didn't verbalize it to anybody the way that Trent did. And these are the repercussions of the 49ers offseason going the way that it did, and you were going to pay for the way that this offseason went at some point, and it's now. It's probably better now than 16 weeks from now, but you were going to pay for it at some point, and it's happening now.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, again, with Williams, again, I'm the biggest Trent Williams guy ever. I think he's the most important player on that team.
I'm with you.
But his week one and week three, because of, you know, the IVs, you know, he missed a couple of snaps, but not that much. His week two, he flat out wasn't good at all.
Yeah.
And let's just not act like it's because the Minnesota Vikings have some secret to get through Trent Williams. I mean, we can't have this graphic out there that, you know, the last whatever 900, what a pressure. I mean, like passing attempts, mm-hmm. he'd only let up one pressure or whatever. And then in week two, he just gets rolled. Just absolutely dominated because he just isn't the same player yet. And then you hope that his body holds up while he gets in the right shape. Because, you know, while you're trying to get in shape, that you could easily get hurt trying to get back to the physical shape that you should be in walking into a season. And we all acted like, oh, well, Trent can just walk in off the street and just be as dominant as he ever was. And, you know, for the most part, there have been games where he is, but then there are also, you know, one of the three games where he just wasn't. And, you know, again, this is all part of a larger question you have with this team about their mental preparedness coming into the season. And we all thought they were just perfectly fine after a week one win where they looked really dominant. But then moving forward, what do they look like? And, you know, are they the team that was good in week one? Are they the team that was good in the first half of yesterday's game and then bad in the second half? Or are they the team that wasn't hardly good at all and against Minnesota? And I don't know who we don't know who they are quite yet.
Yeah, I don't think they've been bad yet this year. I don't think they were bad against the Vikings. I do think the Vikings have proven they're a good football team. Yesterday's loss is bad. You're up double digits in the fourth quarter. There's no other way to frame it. It's bad. You lose that game with 7 minutes left or whatever that you're up. That's bad. I don't think as a whole, though, they've looked bad, but I have been really concerned about the way that their defense looks. And if that doesn't get corrected in the weeks moving forward, this is a wild card team. Like a team with this type of defense is not going to win a championship. That's far too much pressure put on Brock Purdy and the rest of those offensive weapons when they get healthy and return to the lineup.
Yeah, for me, it's been the big mistakes, right? Like their defensive backfield just hasn't been good at all. I mean, when you give up the 97-yard touchdown to Justin Jefferson against Minnesota, I mean, come on now. You got the team pinned at the 3-yard line.
Yeah.
What are you doing here? When you can't get off the field and the whole fourth quarter on third and long, that's not good enough. And then you get into this game yesterday, like you can't have that bomb down the field in that moment. Chavarius Ward got burned for one. You know, you had the PI. Well, you had two PIs, right?
Yep.
One on a defensive back and one on a linebacker. Like they just don't look in sync. And they don't really have the same excuse that the offensive side has, where you're playing shorthanded or you didn't have Trent Williams forever. Like, that defensive unit has been together for the most part, and they just haven't been very good. And they're getting Hufanga back. And so, you know, there definitely was some awkwardness there between him and Warner, it looked like, where they just weren't on the same page. And it was almost like they were worried about hitting each other a couple of times. But that will work itself out. It's just the overall vibe of the team right now, especially on the defensive side of the ball, where, you know, they just can't get off the field when they need to.
And maybe for teams like them, James, because we've obviously talked extensively about the San Francisco 49ers, talked about the Raiders too, and how the Raiders are or were supposed to be a really good defensive team based on what they built under Antonio Pierce for the last nine or so games last year. And then we talked about the Cowboys, which looked like an absolute disaster on the defensive end, and their best defensive player seems fed up with everybody in the Cowboys locker room. Those are three really good defenses that are having a difficult time getting going this year, and it seems it's all for different reasons. The Raiders, I'm not entirely sure about. The Cowboys and 49ers, it seems to come down to, is it scheme, is it personnel, or do these guys just need to get used to the fact there's a couple of key pieces that are missing? And some of them won't be coming back. Obviously, Dre Greenlaw's out. He'll be back at some point with the San Francisco 49ers. Eric Armstead's not coming back. Like, there are guys who have been a part of what they've been building who they're just gone. And maybe, for lack of a better term, they're adjusting on the fly here a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, what the 49ers did on their defensive line was basically say, okay, we're going to take the money that we're paying Eric Armstead and we're going to break it up into two or three players, right? And sometimes when you do that, it doesn't help. Like, you downgraded with the player that you had to go with two lesser players who make lesser amounts of money. And that's okay. Sometimes it does work out, but it's kind of like a platoon situation that you have with the San Francisco Giants. Like, at some point you should probably go try to get somebody who can hit 30 home runs in a season and not just have two guys who can hit 12. Because it's just not good enough. And so you're feeling certainly the result of Armstead a little bit, but I think a bigger issue there is Dre Greenlaw being out. Greenlaw and Warner just together, they move so well, like in a flow together. And, you know, I hate to like harp on Warner at all, because you know, what he did against Minnesota was just incredible. Like, he was just so good, but he wasn't good yesterday. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of reasons he's not good. One of them is that he's trying to cover up for a guy who just isn't nearly as talented as his normal partner at the linebacker position. And that's just really tough to do, especially over an 18 game season where you're constantly trying to figure out, like, where am I supposed to be? Where is he going to be? Type stuff. Those two have to have like some sort of connection. And so far they don't. And not only that, but like the talent level, the drop from Greenlaw to, you know, the guys that they're playing at that position now is just like, it's so huge. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Devondre Campbell is the guy who's lining up next to.
Yeah. Campbell. Sorry. Warner. Yeah.
Oh, it's good. Do you, any other games stand out to you yesterday? Obviously, the Raiders' loss was embarrassing. Are you in on the Vikings yet and Sam Darnold?
I'm in on them as much as he's just doing what he has to do to get the job done. I think he's been really solid. I think he's a good story so far in the NFL. You know, we forget that Vikings team was really good like 2 years ago and everyone bashed on them because they barely won a bunch of games, but they barely won like 13 games.
That happens like, a lot every year. Someone doesn't win by the amount of points that people think they should, and they discount their, oh yeah, but they just snuck those wins in. It's like, all right, they snuck 12 of them in. Like, come on.
Well, that's true. And then remember that before he got hurt last year, Kirk Cousins had like 18 throwing touchdowns in like the first 6 weeks of the season. He was unbelievable. He was the number one fantasy football player in the league. And then he got hurt. So it's not like they don't have talent. They have all kinds of talent around them. I think Aaron Jones was a good pickup. I think their defense is spectacular, but more than anything, I think their coaching is just off the charts. Like if you're going to play the 49ers 1 week with Brock Purdy, who, whether you love Brock Purdy or not, there are people out there who are detractors. I mean, the dude threw for 4,300 yards and 31 touchdowns last year. He is a very, very good quarterback. And to make Brock Purdy look confused a bunch of times, At first I was like, okay, well, that's a Brock problem. You know, he needs to figure out whatever's going on. But then you go in to up against the Texans, and to make CJ Stroud look completely human and completely confused so many times, I just like, you're just in awe of what's happening with the Vikings defense. And they're the one team right now that, whether it's smoke and mirrors or whatever it is, they've kind of figured out how to be elite on the defensive side of the ball, a way that, you know, we saw like the Miami Dolphins be elite in the first month and a half of the season last year on the offensive side of the ball. So, you know, hat tip to their coaching staff there in Minnesota, who I think is doing just a tremendous job of, you know, figuring out how to get the most out of their team.
Well, let's shift our attention to the Sacramento Kings, James, because we're getting pretty close to training camp getting underway. You told me the date. I forgot it already. When does training camp start for the Kings?
Tuesday.
Not tomorrow. Next Tuesday. No. Okay.
Yeah, we got media day on Monday, and then on Tuesday we have training camp starting. I mean, we're 16 days away from the first preseason game, something like that.
Yeah, and that's the is that the Warriors at the Golden 1 Center? Is that the first one?
That might be it. To be honest with you, I don't look at the schedule until it's here. I try to avoid looking at it until it's all the way here. But yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be a very cool ramp up this week as we start to get into, you know, what we think will be training camp battles and, you know, who's going to make this roster, who's not. Are they done shopping? When will Kevin Huerter play? You know, there are a whole lot of things that are like kind of intrigue coming into this training camp. And I think a lot of it centers around that shooting guard, small forward spot. And I think this is going to be a really competitive season, but also there's going to be some intrigue, especially early on.
Are there real training camp battles? I mean, obviously you mentioned the two spot, but the unique thing about that, if we understand this correctly, when camp starts next Tuesday, Huerter won't be a part of like 5-on-5 stuff and like the true up and down. So it feels like he might be a little bit at a little bit of a disadvantage there.
Yeah, I think that's the initial thought that people are going to like have in their head, right? But the problem is that training camp really is the first, you know, week is about conditioning. It's about running through offensive sets. It's about doing all like the meticulous groundwork that you need to put in offensive, defensive changes and sort of identity pieces. It's also about sort of building your I don't know, your chemistry, your personality, your culture around a team and sort of putting your stamp on who we're going to be this year. You know, we've seen this team, what was it, all in? Was that last year or was that the year before? I think last year was connected. So I think all in was 2 years
Mike's
ago.
First year,
yeah. I kind of see what is their identity? Who are they going to be? And the good thing is that, sure, they go 5-on-5. Like they'll do two-a-days for maybe the first 2 or 3 days. Maybe they won't do two-a-days the first day, but then the second and third day they usually do. That's when you actually in the evening they'll typically do a lot of like 5v5, like running up and down the court and actually playing some basketball. The rest of the time, just to get back to the question at hand, the rest of the time Kevin Huerter will be allowed to play. Mm-hmm. He just won't be allowed to run into anybody. And so he'll be allowed to do offensive sets. He'll be able to come in and shoot. He'll be able to run up and down the court with his teammates. The only thing he won't be able to do is full contact, which he hasn't been cleared for. I think they said mid-October, right? Now he's been cleared to resume workouts. He's been cleared to resume shooting. He's been cleared to resume weightlifting, but he hasn't been cleared for contact. And so I think it's a disadvantage, yes, but it's not like the ultimate, like, oh my gosh, he's going to be so far behind, where Devin Carter is going to be so far behind.
Yeah.
And that's where sort of I'd make the distinction.
Is it even remotely realistic that he doesn't play this year?
Devin Carter?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, it just depends on who you are midseason. Right. And the reason why, like, if Devin Carter was a second year player who hurt his shoulder and then needed off season shoulder surgery, even if it came late, you know, like this one did in July, right? You still, in that situation, you would have an understanding of the playbook. You would have a chemistry with the players around you. You would understand where, you know, De'Aaron Fox likes to get a pass. You understand the weaknesses and sort of the pluses and minuses of your teammates as defenders. You know, who calls out a screen, who doesn't. You would know all of these things, the functional things that you need while you're on the court. The fact that Devin Carter, he'll be able to go through walkthroughs. He'll be able to go through, like, sit there and understand what's happening, sort of like, this is what the offensive, idea is. I need to get to this corner. But I always remember, like, Willie Cauley-Stein told us in year two, like, what he was ready for in coming out of his rookie season and going into his second year. He said, last year, I ran on the court because that's what they told me to do. And I just, like, that's what I'm supposed to do, so I'm going to go do it. He's like, about midway through the season, I started to understand why I was running to where I was running. I figured out the why, and not just the like what to do, but the why I'm doing what I'm doing. And once he's like, so really excited for year two, because in year two, I already understand the why. Now it's like, how do I get better? How do I make myself different? How do I improve? If I understand now why I'm running from point A to point B, do I want to get a fast start to get there, or do I want to go slowly and then have a breakthrough run, you know? So there's a lot to it where Devin Carter's just missing all of that. And I feel for him because, you know, he will be able to sit back and I'm sure he's a student of the game. His dad is a coach, you know, he's a coach's son. That's always a good thing. And it's the type of player he is to sort of be a connective piece. But he's not going to be on the court. He's not going to be able to, like, again, pass the ball to guys. He's not going to be able to go find his spot on the court and sort of find his rhythm just because he's so far away from being healthy.
I feel like that's a great breakdown of, unintentionally, a great breakdown of why sometimes we should be a little bit more patient with young players. I mean, we're so regularly often, okay, this is their second year, they got to be great. Okay, this is their third year, they better show us what they are. It's like they're still taking in aspects of the NBA game every year. Some are big and grand, like the ones that you just laid out. Some might be a little bit more nuanced, and every year the game changes for them a little bit more.
Well, I think that that's a huge piece to it, and I also think that having a 19-year-old kid or a 20-year-old kid or a 21-year-old kid, just depending on how long they've been in the game type deal. Like, there's all of these mental and physical aspects to their bodies and their lives that change. Look at Keegan Murray in year one of his career. Look at Keegan Murray in year two. It's a totally different player. Mm-hmm. Like, if you didn't know that, like, if you just gave, like, a blank face, which of course Keegan Murray has, like, half the time. But if you just, like, wiped out who it was and you compared the two players, you would have a very tough time distinguishing him from his rookie year to his second year. I mean, offensively, he wasn't nearly as efficient in his second year, but just the body frame, the shoulders, the you know, the bicep like development, like everything you're seeing.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From him, growth-wise. And I think that's one of the most difficult things about the NBA versus the NFL. Like the NFL, guys come into the league and they are who they are. They get better at running routes and they get better understanding like the concepts of their team, and their situations change. And, you know, like whether they have success or not depends on how well they deal with all of that. But they're pretty much they have to stay in until their junior year, until they're done with their junior year. And by the time they all get into the league, they're 21, 22, 23 years old. Then throw in COVID, half these kids are coming in, you know, a year older than that. But they're defined as who they are physically. And the NBA, that's just not the case, man. You have guys that grow 2 or 3 inches while they're in the league. They get taller. Their arms get longer. You know, their bodies are still changing. And they're also, they fill out at a different rate. The NFL, like, guys are workout warriors from the time they are freshmen in high school until the time, you know, they get done with college. That's not always the case with NBA players. That, you know, we're looking, Victor Wembanyama had never lifted a weight before his rookie season, like ever. Mm-hmm. And that's not something that would ever happen with an NFL prospect. And so it's not just like the mental adjustment and growing into the role and trying to figure everything out. On top of that, a lot of these guys, their bodies are changing and morphing. And like 1 year they may say, hey, we're probably going to use you more at the four this year. And then next year they come to you and say, hey, we probably need you to lean down so you can play the three a bunch more. Is, you know, like Jason Thompson, hey, you're a five. No, you're a four. Hey, somebody said they're going to try you at the three, so we need you to change. And so you're dealing with these guys constantly trying to redefine what their bodies look like and everything else. It's a trip to watch, especially when you get to see a player's, you know, sort of career arc.
James Hamm from the Insiders, our insider here as we prepare for Kings training camp 1 week from tomorrow. We'll talk more about the Sacramento Kings when dealing with James Hamm. Return here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320. Recognize the hypocrisy in what I just did, James. We were talking about, you told the Willie Cauley-Stein story, and it's like sometimes we push players to, you know, hit certain levels, and, oh, we expect you to do this, we expect you to do that. Meanwhile, each year they're understanding a different nuance of the game, and 5 minutes later I'm just destroying Trevor Lawrence during the commercial break because I don't feel like he's been good enough. And this is a guy who had to live through like Urban Meyer as his coach. I think he's already had three coaches in his NFL career, and he doesn't exactly play for a model franchise, so might have been a little too hard on Trevor Lawrence during that commercial break.
No, I get you. Yeah, I'm kind of intrigued to see, you know, is his career, what sort of career arc does he have? Because, I mean, as a top tier pick, you kind of hope that he becomes, at some point in his career, he should be better than Derek Carr. And I don't think he is yet. And that's kind of a stunner. And, you know, there are guys like that who just kind of get to a certain place in the world, but, you know, they're kind of like the 15th, 16th, 17th best quarterback in the NFL. And that's not like what they thought he would be. They thought he would be what Joe Burrow is. And I don't always love what Joe Burrow is either, because he's certainly had a bunch of injury issues, but he's also a guy who's made it to the Super Bowl and led his team to playoff runs and stuff. So anyway.
Yeah, as we shift our attention back to the Sacramento Kings, whose training camp kicks off Media Day 1 week from today, training camp 1 week from tomorrow, year three under Mike Brown will commence, and this year will be entirely different than the previous two. Year one was, Mike, fix it. It's a disaster. We think we got you a decent squad here, but fix it. And Mike did. Year two was, all right, well, let's see. Let's run it back, see what happens, and you know, let's do what we did last year, with Mike's desire to be better, despite the roster being pretty much the same. This year is, all right, we went out and got DeMar DeRozan. We think we've upgraded this roster. And we made sure Malik didn't go anywhere. We need to go out there and we need to be good. I think the expectation, Hammer, in just completely my own opinion, I think the expectation this year is to be a very, very good basketball team.
I think the expectation within their walls is to be a very good basketball team. I think the expectation everywhere else is let's wait and see. Mm. Just because of what we saw in year one to year two, I think year two, there are a lot of people around the league who felt vindicated by, you know, the Kings not taking some giant leap forward. Mm-hmm. And so they're being dismissive and going to kind of just leave the Kings out of most of their general high-end NBA basketball conversation. So I think that there's going to be less expectation from the outside. Maybe internally these guys know they've got to get back to that level and they know what they have to do here. But I think it's going to be more of like they have a true identity and a place that they're heading, as opposed to like a whole bunch of things from the outside that people think that they might be. I think a lot of people forget that in year one of Mike Brown, they won 18 more games than they did the year before.
Yeah.
And that is so difficult to do. Now, we all expected them to take a bigger leap and not lose two more games the next year. But again, you can, if they didn't have injuries in the end, if they didn't miss a bunch of free throws, if they didn't just, you know, like not come out to play against the worst teams in the league, the outcome of last season would have been totally different. They would have been in the playoffs. So it would have been a 50-win team or right at 50, you know. So I think that this is one of those years where you kind of know that you are a playoff team and you need to act accordingly and not get overwhelmed and not make this excuse like what we saw last year, where a lot of these guys haven't been here before. It's like, okay, maybe, but we don't have to, you don't waste years trying to figure out how to learn how to be somewhere. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think this will be a much more refined, like, focus team on what the task is at hand.
A couple of quick things, James. They are important. Nick Wagner tweeting about 49ers injuries as Kyle Shanahan is speaking to the media now. Javon Hargrave has a partially torn triceps. He is out for the rest of the season. Javon Hargrave's season is over. D. Winters has an ankle injury, and Brock Purdy has back soreness. He's day-to-day. Again, according to Kyle Shanahan, Brock Purdy, back soreness, D. Winters had an ankle injury, and Javon Hargrave has a partially torn triceps, and his season is over. More brutal injury news for the San Francisco 49ers, as Hargrave was a bright spot yesterday at moments on the defensive end for the San Francisco 49ers. Anything else that comes from Kyle Shanahan, we'll certainly pass that along to you. Back to the Sacramento Kings, talking about the expectations and Mike Brown entering his third season. I wonder, too, Hammer, is there a bit of a Is there a bit of an exhale for everybody involved in the sense that we don't have to ask any more questions about Monty McNair and his long-term future? We don't have to ask any more questions about Mike Brown and his long-term future. We don't even have to ask questions about Malik Monk and his long-term future. The only thing that's really in question is De'Aaron Fox, and I'm not sure how much of his long-term future is in question, just he's playing this out, playing the contract game, hoping to earn all NBA and get to a, you know, get to a certain bench point that he can get to at the end of this year. But is it naive to think that maybe there's a little bit of an exhale with this group, and they, as much as we can say focus on basketball, you know, you are thinking about your contracts, you are thinking about your future, you are thinking about the different things ahead of you if you don't succeed. All of that's over, and everyone's going to be here for a long time.
Yeah, well, okay, so yes, player-wise, everyone is going to be here for a while. And that's always something that you point to, right? Like right away, this is, you know, you've got Fox under contract for 2 years, Keegan Murray's under contract for 2 years, but then team options, you know, well, the ability to extend him next summer and keep him here long-term. Domas is under contract forever. You got 3 years of DeMar DeRozan if you want it. You've got 4 years of Malik Monk, and at the worst, 3 years. So yeah, the core for sure is something you're walking into this season and you're like, okay, this is what they're doing. This is who they are. As far as like coaches and GMs, like, look, they're always held to a different standard and a different, you know, like if things go south quickly, you never know how those things are going to work their way out. And I hope that that's the case. But we have more assurance because they're under contract. Mike's under contract for what, this year and two more after that. Monty's under contract for a couple of years as well, like two or three. So we don't have that worry going in that there is a dark cloud hanging over these guys. But at the same time, this is professional sports, and this is the Sacramento Kings, and this is the NBA, and you still have the same owners, and you still have the same type of feel around this team. And that means that, yeah, there is continuity and there is a game plan, and there's year three of the same defensive principles and offensive principles. But, you know, nothing is for sure in the NBA. I mean, Monty Williams is going to get paid for like the next 5 years, you know? So I think same with Frank Bullock. That guy just keeps getting paid for. He is the king of the two for get paid for four or five and only coach two, like the coupon, like, yeah, whereas bank account just keeps getting filled up by somebody that no one works for.
Yeah, good for him. Frank Vogel, man. Good for him. Well, there's more from Kyle Shanahan. this is a gem. Christian McCaffrey, this translated by our man Nick Wagner. Christian McCaffrey traveled to Germany over the weekend to visit with a specialist. He's expected to spend a few days there this week to get help for his ailing Achilles. Nothing screams this is going well than traveling to a different country to get help. That's Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey traveled to Germany over the weekend. He's expected to spend a few days there. Of course, this doesn't matter in terms of his availability. He's on IR. He wasn't coming back this week, or he wasn't coming back for the next handful of weeks. It is a bit concerning that he had to leave the country to get some attention for his Achilles. So there's more from Kyle Shanahan today.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times what we're talking about here, it sounds, I mean, like, not that I know exactly what he's doing, but Germany and a couple of spots in that area do like PRP, the platelet-rich plasma. So it could just be that.
That's the spinning, right? Well, we don't have to get all in depth into that, but it's the Kobe treatment. It's the Kobe treatment. I think Kobe made that ultra famous.
Yeah. And he made it ultra famous also by going overseas and getting it done. I don't know that it's something that is being allowed fully all over the place in the U.S. So I don't know. Maybe there's something that they're seeing. This is something that I've been concerned with because when you start hearing that you know, he had this problem like the first week of the playoffs, and then he's he's still not feeling great. And we're talking like 8 or 10 months. First of all, there's no chill on McCaffrey. So I'm going to guess that part of this is that he tried to fight his way through an injury and didn't allow it to heal. And now it's sitting in the same spot that it was before, just because he can't sit still and he's like a workout warrior. But like, look, at some point, I think we all should have been concerned with the fact that Christian McCaffrey is getting closer to 30 and is had major injuries throughout his career and, you know, hasn't played full seasons for a long time. So yeah, I don't know. I'm a little concerned. Mm-hmm. Someone is in the chat saying they do PRP at UCSF. They might have some other thing that they do over there that's very similar.
The special Germany PRP is what it is, Peyton. German PRP hits different.
Yeah, I'm worrying. I'm wondering too if like there's a fraying of the Achilles. Like, what is it that? Like, they haven't been super specific outside of a calf injury and then tendonitis and the Achilles. You're worried about what it is that's going on here.
Yeah.
And it's just not good. Yeah. And it's been long term. So
there again, the latest from Kyle Shanahan, Christian McCaffrey, went to Germany to get some attention on his Achilles. Again, no big deal for his availability. He wasn't going to be available for at minimum another 3 weeks. Kyle Shanahan already suggested it could be 6 weeks. And I think as we head into training camp for the Sacramento Kings 1 week from tomorrow, the number one thing everyone is concerned about is, okay, no one get hurt during the preseason. That's always the conversation. Just get through training camp. Just get through the preseason and no one get hurt. Whatever happens during the regular season happens. You got to deal with it. But don't get hurt during the preseason.
Yeah, I think it's funny, too, because I ask this question every year. And I know some people are they always get on me for asking it. But we go through the first 3 days of training camp. Usually you have day one and a lot of times they have games at night. So, again, they're playing at night and then you see them on day two. And then they play again. And then day three, by day four, somebody isn't feeling good every year. Mm-hmm. And it's just whether it's a twist or a tweak or whatever, there are a lot of ice bags on day three. And day four is usually the day where somebody's like, yeah, I think I need to sit out today because I'm too sore. So you're always wondering who that's going to be. And whether it is, you know, something, you know, more than just like bumps and bruises, it's never more than bumps and bruises for the most part. You know, basketball players, they come in pretty good shape. And a lot of these guys have been in Sacramento or in other places working out together for quite some time. And so, but there's still an issue that the coaching staff pushes you really hard early in training camp. And I want to know, how do they deal with the fact that, DeMar DeRozan isn't really, like a get out and run the break type player? And how does that work with their system? And what does Mike do in training camp to make sure that these guys are playing at the pace that he wants? Because that's usually where you set the pace and then you go from there. You try to get guys in great shape and really push their cardio early in camp. And then that's sort of the standard you want to live by the rest of the season. And I want to see if he gets back to the coach he was in his first year where, you know, the players weren't super happy about practicing every single day and then practicing for an hour and a half, 2 hours every single day, or if he's going to be more like the coach he was last year where he kind of let off the gas with because they already knew the game plan and all that stuff and they're just fine-tuning throughout the year.
Is that the biggest question in terms of fit for DeMar? If not, what is it?
Well, I mean, the one question is like, there's only one ball, right? How do we make everyone?
Well, I think they'll work through that. Like, I think this team is full of unselfish guys who want to be successful, want the team to be successful.
No, I totally agree, but I still think that that's going to be a concern. Like, how quickly does it gel? Does it gel instantly, or does it take a little while? You know, we've already heard DeMar said he went and worked out with with Domas for a week, and he felt like he played with him for years. So he was instantly able to build some chemistry and some sort of, you know, connectivity. And so I think that that's going to be part of the problem. But outside of that, like, where does DeMar fit, like, defensively is always going to be a question. You know, like, I went on the Nate Duncan podcast, Dunked On podcast, and we talked about DeRozan a lot. And, you know, like, from most of the metrics he's seen, like, DeMar played mostly on the defensive end. He played mostly power forward last year, mm-hmm. even at 6'6". And that might be a more natural position for him. And he'll be undersized, but, you know, the modern NBA power forward really isn't as tall. And, you know, a lot of them, well, they aren't back to the basket guys anymore. So you can have a guy like DeMar go out on the perimeter and defend these guys a lot of the time. And that would allow, you know, Keegan Murray to play the three, which I believe is a more natural position at this point, and allows you to transfer him from the three right up to guard the one and the two very easily. So kind of intriguing. Like, I want to see how it all looks, especially on the defensive end. You made this huge jump from year one of Mike Brown to year two of Mike Brown defensively. Like, can you maintain that without Harrison Barnes? Can you maintain that with DeMar DeRozan? Can you maintain that with, you know, some of the other pieces that have changed, whether it's, you know, Jordan McLaughlin over Davion Mitchell, or it's, you know, again, Keon Ellis playing more minutes from the start of the season where he didn't last year. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of question marks that I have here, but again, they still don't have a true rim protector outside of Orlando Robinson, who might be a rim protector, and they don't have that length and athleticism at the three and the four outside of Keegan, which, you know, Jalen McDaniels is going to have to prove that he can be that guy too.
Was the improved defense from year one to year two, talking about Mike Brown year one to year two, was that on the back, like, more of Keegan Murray and Keon Ellis than of any other combination of Sacramento Kings?
Probably. You know, to be honest, I think De'Aaron Fox became a much better defensive player as the season went on.
Yeah.
I also think you had, like, the trickle-down, you know, situation where because Keon was defending, you know, the most difficult guys and putting pressure on the ball in a unique way, it gave De'Aaron a lot more freedom to play free safety and mm-hmm. go get a bunch of steals, you know, like live ball turnover type stuff. So I think there's that. But I also think that, you know, once we got past the All-Star break and the league changed its sort of like mantra with regards to physicality, the Kings were the team that figured it out one of the quickest, you know, and I think they were what, number 8 in defensive rating after the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. And they figured out how to defend the three. That was a big issue early in the season. To be honest with you, DeMar DeRozan is much better defending the three than Harrison Barnes is. But Harrison Barnes, while some people aren't so, you know, enamored with him as a defender, who are you going to put on Zion Williamson? Who are you going to put on LeBron James this season? And that's something that Mike Brown's going to have to figure out, because it's not super simple. It's Keegan Murray. But if Keegan Murray gets in foul trouble, who's next? And not having Harrison Barnes will actually matter. And people who don't believe that, you're just ignoring what Harrison Barnes meant to a team as, you know, really is almost like a fourth starter in baseball who pitches 200 innings. And he's out there every 5 games and, you know, gives you a solid, you know, every once in a while he's great. Every once in a while he gets smacked around. But overall gives you, you know, solid production and stability at a position. Not having that is going to be interesting, and you have to hope that DeMar can fill that role.
I was going to ask, do you think DeMar guards some of those guys that Harrison used to guard? I mean, I know it was primarily Keegan. Keegan did a lot against LeBron last year, but Harrison Barnes did fill in and do quite a bit. Like, does DeMar step into that on the defensive end?
He's going to have to. Yeah, I mean, that's the answer. Like, it, having guys,
which,
like,
is familiar for him, right? Like, that's what you were talking with Nate Duncan about, right? That
spot
is familiar.
And having a guy like, you know, the length and athleticism of Jalen McDaniels is great if he can earn a spot in the rotation. If he can't earn a spot in the rotation, then, like, look, somebody's going to have to take on these guys. And maybe it's Trey Lyles. Maybe Trey Lyles gets an opportunity to take on some of these bigger sort of bull rush guys. But, yeah, going to be an interesting way that Mike Brown has to coach this year. I'm intrigued by it.
Yeah, he's got a lot of talent to manage and a lot of, I'm going to call them offensive-defensive switches, but there'll certainly be some unique matchups on the offensive end versus some unique matchups on the defensive end. And finding out what the best offensive lineup is for Sacramento will certainly be one of Mike's biggest tasks moving forward. And it all starts 1 week from tomorrow. James mentioned it, media day next Monday, first day of practice, 1 week from tomorrow. So this felt like the longest offseason in history, and we are just about 7 days away from it all being over. James, appreciate you as always. Casey, we'll be back tomorrow. Make sure that you're tapped in with us beginning at 10 a.m. here with the Insiders on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.